Have you ever been forgotten? Forgotten? I remember one day, it might have even been before I was born, but it was a family story. My parents forgot one of my brothers in church one Sunday night. They got in the car, were halfway home, and realized, where's Randy? He's not here. They left him sleeping on one of the pews in church. I mean, that's forgotten. Just the other day, I was supposed to have a phone call with someone at 6 o'clock, and they never called, and I'm like, hey, are we going to have our phone call? And like 2 hours later, they're like, oh, sorry. And then to make matters worse, they said, I completely forgot you. I'm like, oh, that made me not feel good. I remember when I was a teenager, I was the youngest person in my friend group by about a couple of grades. For most of my church friends were about a couple grades older than me. And I also lived the furthest away. I was a couple towns away from the rest of them. And so there were a lot of times where I felt like they were all getting together and hanging out and I wasn't being remembered. At least it felt that way to me. And at times I felt forgotten. And feeling forgotten hurts, doesn't it? Anybody else know what this is like?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Feeling forgotten hurts. Beyond typical teenage angst, we all know this feeling of feeling forgotten, whether it's by family, maybe feeling like your kids are getting older and forgetting you more. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's your job, your boss, like they're overlooking you and forgetting you. Maybe you feel like the world is forgetting you. Maybe you feel like God's forgotten you. If anyone had reason to feel forgotten by everyone, including God, it was Joseph. Let's take a minute and recap in case anyone here missed the last couple of weeks. When Joseph was 17 years old, his life was on track for greatness. His father was trusting him and leaning on him to help run the family business where he was kind of being put in places of authority even over his older brothers. Then God spoke to him in two dreams, telling him he was marked to become a leader of his people. But then his brothers, bitter and resentful, got angry, plotted to kill him, but instead then just threw him in a pit. And then instead of that, they took him and they sold him into slavery. And they ended up being dragged to Egypt, sold to a guy named Potiphar, who was the captain of the Pharaoh's guard. There he was faithful and loyal to Potiphar, but remember what happened last week. Potiphar's wife took an interest in Joseph because he was good looking. She tried to get him to go to bed with her day after day after day, but he continually refused. And because of his loyalty to his boss, the Potiphar, his wife convinced him out of her bitterness and anger to throw Joseph in prison. And that's where we left Joseph last week, in prison, in a pit, with his dreams crushed, forgotten. What kind of person do you think you'd become if that was you? If that was you. You know how sometimes we get this justified thing going on in our minds? We use little things to justify other things, like, oh, fine, you're going to change lanes without using a signal? Watch what I do now. I'm going to cut you off. Like, we justify in our heads stupid, juvenile things. Oh, fine, you're going to do this. My wife, you know, you're going to leave your dish on the counter. I'm going to leave my dish in your pillow. You know, that kind of silly justification for stuff. You do it, I do it, we all do it. If that was you, if you had experienced what Joseph experienced, what would you have used that to justify in your own life? What might you have become? How bitter, how frustrated, how self-centered, how angry, how minimal would you have effort would you have given wherever you ended up? Because look what everyone's done to me. What would have become of you? I want you to watch today what becomes of Joseph. So turn in your Bible to Genesis chapter 40, or go follow along on our app. We'll also have it on the screen here too. I want us to look at what happened in Joseph's life. He's there in that pit of a prison. A long time goes by. And then one day, Pharaoh's chief cupbearer and chief baker, they end up doing something that bothers Pharaoh and getting thrown into jail. So the chief baker would have been the one who baked breads and things for Pharaoh. The chief cupbearer was the one who was in charge of making sure Pharaoh's cup was always full. And so they did something. These are two very highly trusted positions. Whatever they did, they end up thrown into this prison, and Joseph is appointed to take care of them. And one night, each of them has their own separate, disturbing dream. And we're going to pick it up in Genesis chapter 40, verse 6. It says, when Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers, there with him in custody in his master's house, why are your faces downcast today? And they said to him, we have had dreams, and there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, well, don't interpretations belong to God? So tell me your dreams. And so they both began to tell Joseph their dreams. The cupbearer goes first, and he tells him, well, in my dream, I saw a vine in front of me, and that vine had three branches on it. And the branches that they budded and gave forth blossoms, and then it ripened into grapes. And then I saw Pharaoh's cup in my hand, and I was taking the grapes, and I was pressing them into the cup to make grape juice for him. And then I put the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Like, what does that mean? And Joseph says, here's what it means. This is the interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh is going to lift up your head and restore you to your office. You shall place the Pharaoh's cup in his hand again, and you will do everything you used to do. You're the cupbearer again. And then he says this, only please remember me when it's well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house, for I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. Well, when the baker saw that the cupbearer got a good report, he said, well, no, Joseph, listen to my dream now too. And so he said, here, I also had a dream, and in my dream, there were three cake baskets on my head, and in the top basket, there was all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but there were birds eating it out of the baskets on my head. And Joseph answered and said, well, here's what your dream means. The three baskets are also 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh's going to lift up your head from off of your shoulders and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh. I know everyone wants to get into all the dreams and what they mean, but here's the simple point I think God's word wants us to understand and see here before we go into anything else. When Joseph was forgotten, he remembered God. He never forgot God. Here's what tells me that Joseph never forgot God. Number one, this is just a small thing. He wasn't walking around that prison in a self-pity fog, was he? Thinking of himself and what had happened in his life and, oh, this is so unfair, this isn't right. If he had been, he never would have noticed these two guys who just had bad dreams. It's not like they had broken legs or were bleeding from the head. They just had a bad night's sleep, and Joseph notices and asks them, cares enough to ask them, hey, guys, what's wrong? What's going on with you? And the two, when they tell Joseph, well, we're troubled, we had disturbing dreams, but there's no one here like we used to have in Pharaoh's court to tell us what our dreams mean, what's the first thing Joseph does? He says, well, what about God? What about God? The first person in Joseph's mind is God. Not because his pastor told him, hey, you should be telling your coworkers about God, but because he had a relationship with God. A relationship that kept God in the forefront of his mind. So he immediately says to them, well, interpretation belongs to God. So tell me your dreams. What does that mean? That means that Joseph expects God and has this confidence in God that he'll be able to work through Joseph to help these two guys out. So he's not thinking about himself. He's thinking about God and how God's going to use him to help these two guys, even though he's forgotten and in prison. When Joseph was in prison, when Joseph was forgotten, he remembered God. And it showed up in his attention to others and in his willingness to live a life of open faith in God and to talk about God and bring God to bear in every situation. When you and I feel forgotten, we have to remember God. The alternative is to let your focus grow narrower and smaller until the only thing you're remembering is you, yourself. And the only thing you're thinking about is what others are doing to you and how it's affecting you. And so you'd walk into this situation the way so many of us do so many times. It's like, oh, great, they're in a bad mood today. That's going to really be a pain for me. I'm going to have to put up with them all day being grumpy because they had bad nights of sleep. Isn't that more like how we go about things? More worried about, oh, no one cares what I'm going through. even though we feel forgotten, even though we might literally be in a pit, remembering God keeps you and me from sinking into an emotional pit. And it enables you and me to be attentive and active in the way Joseph was. Not that Joseph didn't want to get out of the situation. Of course he did. And it's not wrong to want to get out of bad situations. Jesus himself prayed, "Father, if there's any way to let this cup pass from me, please let it pass." And as Joseph was there being used by God to tell this cupbearer his dream, I wonder, and I'm pretty sure Joseph obviously has in mind, well, if he goes back to Pharaoh, this is God here. This is God. God brought these guys here, so now I'm telling this guy his dream. He's going to be in a few days back with Pharaoh. Pharaoh's going to be happy with him, and he'll remember me. He'll talk about me to Pharaoh, and that's going to get me out of this prison. So that's why Joseph asked him, please remember me. And I wonder if Joseph could feel like, oh, I think I see God's hand in this. God's working this out for me. And maybe he started to get hopeful. And sure enough, 3 days later, Pharaoh's birthday comes, and the cupbearer is restored back to his position alongside Pharaoh, giving him his juice. The baker we won't worry about. So now's the moment. If we're watching this in a movie, now's the moment. Cut scene to Joseph there in the pit, just like, oh, please, Lord, please, I hope he remembers me. Swing over to, there's the cupbearer pouring the grapes into the cup and handing it to the Pharaoh, and you're picturing, oh, Pharaoh's going to say, hey, how was your time in prison? And he's going to say, oh, you know, this guy. But that's not what happens. Look at what happens. Verse 23, the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Oh, come on. Isn't that just how life is, though? You feel forgotten. Then you think you see a way. Things are going to work out, and things are going to come together. And you start to get your hopes up, and then slam, the door goes right in your face. 2 years are going to go by between this moment and the next moment we see in Joseph's life. 2 years. That's a long time. But you know what we never, ever see Joseph doing? Up to this moment and over these next 2 years, we have no record of Joseph ever doing this. He never tries to take matters into his own hands and make it work out the way he thinks it should and make a solution for himself. He asked to be remembered, but we never see Joseph take matters into his own hands. We never see him kidnapping someone and trying getting out. We never see him digging a tunnel through, which is remarkable when you think about this in the context of the whole book of Genesis, everything we've been reading, because everyone else God made promises to. When they felt forgotten, when they felt like God was forgetting the promise, they tried to take things into their own hands and make it happen. Adam and Eve, God created them to be like him. What did they do? Took matters into their own hands to become like God. Abraham and Sarah, the great-grandparents of Joseph, God told them, you're going to have more descendants than you can count, but here they are almost 100 years old, no kids. Abraham, we're going to figure something out. Take Hagar, my slave, and now have a child. Right? What are they doing? They're trying to make God's promises come true by taking things into their own hands. Even Joseph's own father, Jacob, when he was born with God's promise that he was going to be the one chosen to carry the covenant out. But what did he do? He took things into his own hands to make things work out for himself in the timing he wanted and made a mess of everything. Everyone else in the whole book, when it comes down to it and they feel forgotten, feel like God might be forgetting, they take things into their own hands and try and make it happen quicker by doing ungodly things. But at no point in Joseph's life do we ever see him trying to force God's promises to happen quicker by doing ungodly things. When you and I start to feel forgotten by God or by others, we start to panic. We start to get upset. We start to do things to take control and do what we got to do, because after all, we're not going to let life just happen to us. But that's not what Joseph did either. Joseph didn't let life happen to him. He wasn't passive. He was active and he was engaged, paying attention to other people's needs, using whatever opportunities came his way to demonstrate faith and trust in God. somewhere between passively letting life happen to you and forcibly trying to make what you think God wants to happen in your life happen right now, is this place of humble, reflective activity. Somewhere between passivity and aggressive trying to take things into your own hands is this place of humility and activity that honors God. Where I'm aware of myself, I'm aware of my situation, I see myself in the big picture, I don't think that life is my story, it's God's story and I'm part of it. And so I'm humble and I remember God. And that remembering God enables me to be active, doing things, living life, without becoming sinfully aggressive, but also without becoming depressively passive. This is what it means to remember God, even when you feel forgotten. Don't get tunnel vision, don't get me vision. Keep your eyes on God in the big picture. Trust God's intentions. Like I said, 2 years go by. 2 years. 2 more years of being forgotten in that pit of the prison. Until one night, Pharaoh himself had a couple dreams, which I know most of you have heard about these dreams. I couldn't find good pictures for these dreams that weren't like gross cows eating cows. But so let me read this, and I want you to use your imagination to picture this whole scene. Pharaoh wakes up from having a couple disturbing dreams, calls in all of his wise people, the magicians they call them, basically the wise men of the court, the advisors, and he tells them his 2 dreams, and none of them can make heads or tail of his dreams. And he's getting anxious, and an anxious Pharaoh is a dangerous Pharaoh. And the cupbearer remembers Joseph in that moment, 2 years later. And he tells Pharaoh about this prisoner who once helped him out by interpreting his dream. And Pharaoh, desperate, calls for Joseph to be taken out of the pit and shaved and cleaned up and given a new set of clothing and then brought in front of him. And then Pharaoh looks at Joseph and says, I had a dream and none of my brilliant wise men can interpret it, but my cupbearer here tells me you can do it for me. And this is how Joseph responds. So go to Genesis chapter 41 now, verse 16 is where we're going to pick it up. And Joseph says, whoa, it's beyond my power to do this. But God can tell you. But God can tell you what it means and set you at ease. And so Pharaoh told Joseph his dream, and he said, in my dream, I was standing by the bank of the Nile River, and I saw 7 fat, healthy cows come up out of the river, the water glistening off their leather? What is it, hair? Fur? I don't know. The water's glistening, and they look amazing, and they start to eat the grass around the marshy area. He said, but then I saw 7 sick-looking cows, scrawny and thin, come up after them. And I've never seen such sorry-looking animals in all the land of Egypt. These thin, scrawny cows, they ate the 7 fat cows, just gobbled them up. But then after they ate them, you'd expect them to look bloated. But no, you couldn't even tell they'd eaten them. They were still thin and scrawny the way they were before. He says, and then I woke up. Then I fell back asleep, and I had another dream. And in my dream, I saw 7 heads of grain, full and beautiful, growing on a single stalk. And then 7 more heads of grain appeared, but these were blighted and shriveled and withered by the wind. He said, in the shriveled heads, they swallowed the 7 healthy-looking heads. And I told these dreams to my wise guys, and none of them could tell me what it meant. So Joseph responded. It said, both of Pharaoh's dreams mean the same thing. God is telling Pharaoh in advance what he's about to do. The 7 healthy cows and the 7 healthy heads of grain both represent 7 years of prosperity. The 7 thin and scrawny cows that came up later and the 7 heads of ugly grain withered by the wind, they represent 7 years of famine. This will happen just as I've described it, for God revealed it to Pharaoh in advance what he is about to do. The next 7 years are going to be a period of great prosperity throughout the land of Egypt. But afterwards, there's going to be 7 years of famine that are going to be so bad, you're going to forget the prosperity of the 7 years that came before. Famine's going to destroy the land, and that famine's going to be so severe that even the memory of the good years will be erased. And as for having 2 similar dreams, well, that just means that it's decreed by God. It's set. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen soon. Let's just pause again and appreciate how in this moment, when Joseph is dragged up out of the pit and cleaned up and brought before Pharaoh, in a moment that could either make him or break him, he immediately points to God again, remembering God. God is in the forefront of his mind. What God's doing is in the forefront of his mind. If he had let himself succumb to feeling forgotten and, oh, poor me, he wouldn't have had God's wisdom for this moment. He would have just been like, oh, great, we're all going to die if famine's coming. But that's not what happened with Joseph. He never forgot God, and that's why he had God's wisdom for this moment and was able to go beyond he didn't just stop at interpreting the dream. They just asked him there to come tell him what the dream meant, but he didn't stop there because he had God's wisdom, because he was remembering God and was with God and God was with him. And so he goes on and starts handing out unsolicited advice. Verse 33 says, Joseph talking to Pharaoh says, therefore, Pharaoh should find himself an intelligent and wise man and put him in charge of the entire land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh should appoint supervisors over the land, let him collect one-fifth of all the crops during the 7 good years, have him gather all the food produced in the good years so that they're ready and that are just ahead, and bring it to the Pharaoh's storehouses, store it away, guard it there where there will be food for the cities. That way there will be enough to eat when the 7 years of famine come to the land of Egypt. Otherwise, the famine's going to destroy the land. And Pharaoh was so impressed with Joseph. You all know what happened. He immediately made him second in command over all of Egypt. He put a ring on Joseph's finger. He clothed him with a beautiful robe and said, Joseph is in charge of everything. And just like that, Joseph was in charge of all of Egypt, from the prison to a prince. But listen to what Pharaoh observed about Joseph. Listen to what Pharaoh saw that you and I need to see too. Verse 38, Pharaoh says, can we find anyone else like this man, so obviously filled with the Spirit of God? Pharaoh could see that God was with Joseph. And now we begin to see that God never had left Joseph. God had never forgotten Joseph. Even when Joseph was being attacked by his brothers, thrown into the pit by his brothers, sold into slavery by his brothers, even when Joseph was being attacked by Potiphar's wife every day, even when he was unjustly thrown into that pit, even when he was forgotten, God was not forgetting Joseph. He never left Joseph. God was using every single evil thing that anyone ever did to Joseph to accomplish God's purposes, not just for Joseph, but for the world, to save the nation that was Israel's family and the world. See, so many times you and me, our intentions only go as far as our own brain cases. God's intention is not just to rescue Joseph, but to rescue his people and save the world. Now, listen, that did not mean that the pain that Joseph went through was any less painful, but it did mean that the pain he went through was not purposeless. God was using it. I believe God uses all of our pain. I'm not saying God's the author of our pain. Most pain is the result of my sin and your sin. The things we do that are wrong or stupid or mistaken, whether purposely or accidentally, or it's the result of other people's sin and the things other people do. But we can trust that in God's hands, this pain will be given a purpose and will lead to something glorious that far outweighs the pain, because God has not and never will forget us. Paul, y'all remember Paul, the Apostle Paul, who went through more pain than I think any of us can even imagine, beaten almost to death multiple times, thrown in prison, starved, all kinds of stuff he went through. Listen to what he said about going through pain in this world. In 2 Corinthians 4:17, he writes, for this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. That's a guy who had something going on in his body that he begged God to take away 3 times because it was bothering him so much, and it wasn't taken away. That's the guy who wrote these words. This light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond comparison. Maybe that's a verse you need to put up in your home somewhere for this week, or maybe something time in the future where you're going to need to remember that. Put it on your phone, make it the home screen, make it the background on your computer. Nothing compares to the glory of what God is doing. He hasn't forgotten us, but he is working through everything that happens to bring about something glorious and amazing. And all of our mistakes, all of our failures, all of our forgetting, God uses it all to accomplish his purpose. So when you feel forgotten, remember God, because God has not forgotten you. Worship team, would you make your way back? Remember God because God has not forgotten you. How do we know? How do I know God hasn't forgotten me? How do you know God hasn't forgotten you? Jesus. Jesus is the answer to that. How do I know God hasn't forgotten me? Because Jesus already came to set me free from prison. I'm like, God, you've forgotten me. I'm in this pit. No, Jesus already came to rescue you and me up out of that pit. Jesus willingly took off his heavenly robe and became one of us, humbled himself enough that he let us strip him even further and put him in the pit, the tomb. And he trusted the Father to raise him up out of it. Why did Jesus do all that? To set you free. Why am I forgotten and in this trouble I'm in? You're not. You're not. If you're trapped in some prison, stuck in some pit, it's not because God has forgotten you, it's because you're forgetting God. It doesn't matter what you and I are going through. It doesn't need to be a pit. It doesn't need to be your grave because Jesus already overcame the grave, which means it can now become the place where God is growing you and using you to be active and alive and doing things that are going to contribute to the glory he's building and what he's doing in this world. So I'm not telling you to just sit back and accept whatever happens to you in this life. No, I'm telling you that there's a place in between that God's word shows us. There's this place in between passively letting everything happen to us and aggressively trying to take things into our own hands and make what we think should happen, happen when we want it to happen. And in that in-between place is this place of humbly remembering God and seeing every situation as an opportunity to honor God and care for others. Where instead of being laser focused on getting myself out of my situation, I'm focused on God and how I could honor him in the middle of it. Where I have a deep peace in the midst of trouble, in the midst of moments when I feel like I've been forgotten. Forgotten by friends who I thought would be by my side, forgotten by leaders who I thought were looking out for me. I'm trusting God and have a peace. As long as I'm remembering him, I know he's never forgetting me. Knowing that God is working in all things, working for the good with those who love him. And look, if you walked in here this morning feeling forgotten, feeling stuck in some pit, remember God, because God hasn't forgotten you. You need to know that. The song we're about to sing is becoming kind of a theme song for this series. When you feel forgotten, it's easy to forget God's goodness. It's easy to not remember all that he's done in our lives for us. And so as we sing this song, I want you to let God speak to your soul. Let God talk to your soul. And I want you to feel God pursuing you with his goodness, running after you with his goodness. And I want to invite you to surrender to that goodness today. Would you stand with me? Let's sing this together.